strike was led by Emil Raiev, a Polish-American worker who had joined the union when he was only 15 years old. The strike grew to include 50,000 workers and shut down the Pennsylvania hosiery industry. The workers won raises between 8 and 10%. In 1947, the hosiery workers decided that they did not want to pay the dues increase required by the CIO. They left the organization and reaffiliated with the AFL. Finally, in 1965, changes in the industry led the union to merge with the Textile Workers Union.
Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to X-Ray FM.
KXRY Portland.
At 91.1 and 107.1 FM.
And in Nehalem.
Wheeler.
Manzanita.
And Rockaway Beach.
At 91.7 FM. Streaming online everywhere.
Live and archived.
At x-ray.fm.
Radio is yours.
X-Ray FM would like listeners to know about Mainspring Community Pantry.
Mainspring provides free food, clothing, hygiene products, and small household goods to anyone experiencing financial hardship in Portland. Last year, Mainspring distributed 1.1 million pounds of food to the community, reaching over 83,000 people. Mainspring envisions Portland as a city where all residents have access to healthy food, clothing, stable housing, and employment opportunities, creating economic and social stability.
For more information about their multiple food programs and free clothing boutique, visit mainspringpdx.org.
This is Natasha Fisher. I am on the board for X-Ray FM. I am also the interviewer for Talk to the Hand. And you're listening to X-Ray FM. Radio is truly yours.
This is Ross Beach, host of Alive with Pleasure, inviting you to join me every Friday afternoon from 2 to 4 p.m. as we decipher the live music listings and become slightly more hip to the events happening in our city. It's all right here on X-Ray FM. Radio is yours.
Thousands of people on the streets of Portland are falling through the cracks of essential services that they desperately need. Portland People's Outreach Project conducts outreach in 8 locations around town, including our own drop-in center, providing meals, access to medical and healthcare services, harm reduction supplies, clothing, and above all, the love, compassion, and community that inspires people to want to make further positive change. Portland People's Outreach Project meets people where they're at. Literally, building trust and life-saving bridges to care. More information at portlandpeoplesoutreach.org.
Hi, this is Tom from Portland. Thanks for listening to X-Ray FM. Radio is yours.
1, 2, 3, 4. Clap your hands.
Yeah.
Stomp your feet.
Yeah.
Get on the line.
Yeah.
Swing on the vine.
Yeah.
Get in the bracket.
Yeah.
You know I like it. In the jungle. Get in the bracket.
Yeah.
You know I like it. Come on. Wait a minute. There was a time, a long time ago, we didn't have much, but no. Real small. I studied real hard.
Boston, the executive director of SocialSecurityWorks.org. And Alex, I understand you are at a protest, or the protest just wrapped up about a hospital is this about to be shut down?
That's right, Tom. Thanks for having me, as always. Just right across the street is Rahway, a hospital here in Rahway, New Jersey, which is New Jersey's 7th congressional district. The dude who is the congressman here, Tom Kaine Jr., he voted to cut $1 trillion out of Medicaid, as you know, to give the largest tax handouts in history to the richest people in history, to buy golden yachts, to sail to Epstein's Island, or whatever it is that they do with their money. And the consequence of those cuts is that this hospital and hundreds of hospitals across this country are going to close. And so we gathered here with just an amazing group of community leaders, faith leaders, healthcare workers, nurses, doctors, and are raising our voices.
How'd that happen?
Demanding that, you know, Congress stop, that they reverse the cuts, stop taking our healthcare. But, you know, the truth is, Tom, you know, as well as I do, that these Republicans, they're not going to do that. So we're demanding accountability. But we know that that's actually going to have to happen at the ballot box. I just don't believe there. You're going to see like Republicans turning over a new leaf. So we're going to have to actually understand that these cuts are happening. It's not a thing that might happen in the future. These hospitals are going to close. People will die. Families will, you know, not be able to get the care that they need. Nursing homes will close. And I keep saying, I shouldn't do that. They already are. We've seen hospitals closing across the country, nursing homes closing across the country. It's just going to get worse. And that's the reality that we live in.
This is,
you know, it's not like we have nothing.
Yeah. This is all the consequence of Trump's so-called big, beautiful bill, right?
That's right. That's right. And, you know, again, $1 trillion in cuts to Medicaid, hundreds of billions more in not extending the ACA, the credits for the ACA, the Affordable Care Act. And all of it was to give trillions in tax handouts to under 1,000 billionaires and the ultra wealthy in this country. And the consequence is monstrous already, and it's just going to get worse. So we do need to just, we can't let the Republicans do what they always do, which is just sort of like pretend that this stuff is just happening, right, Tom? It's just like comes out of nowhere. You're like, no, choices were made and are continuing to be made. Tom Kaine Jr. Voted to cut $1 trillion from Medicaid. He knew exactly what he was voting for. He knew that it was going to hurt the constituents right here in his district.
Along with every Republican in Congress, by the way.
Every single Republican in Congress. There's no good guy Republican that's like, it's just the bad ones. No, they all did it, Tom. They knew. Yale Public Health, 56,000 people per year will die because of this prematurely. They know that. They know that they are going to kill and harm the most vulnerable and weakest among us. They're going to do that to give trillions of dollars to the worst of us. And they're willing to prey on the least of us to do that. And it's sick.
But they've got to give more tax breaks to Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg and Jeff Bezos. I mean, these guys, you know, they've got to buy a new yacht, you know. They need a new chalet in Switzerland. I mean, it's come on, Alex, have a little heart here. Tell us about the
protest.
Who
will think of the billionaires, Tom?
Yes, exactly. Well, the entire Republican Party, of course. You know, all these Republicans every night they cry themselves to sleep worrying about the fate of the billionaires. Tell us about the protest that you were just at, and to what extent are other, you know, is there a protest movement organizing around this destruction of our rural hospitals by the GOP?
Yeah, and it is. It's rural hospitals, but it's hospitals across the country. Rural hospitals are just devastated. But yes, Tom, this is part, you know, Social Security Works, along with Unrig the Economy and the Economic Security Project, have campaign that we're running across the country called Stop Taking Our Healthcare. It's stoptakingourhealthcare.org. It's running the month of April and in half into May. And we're just going to, we're barnstorming as many of these Republican districts. You got to remember, a lot of these Republicans, they won their districts by less people than healthcare that they voted to take away. Like Miller Meeks in Iowa voted, was won by 800 votes, and she voted to take away 56,000 people's healthcare.
Wow.
So we want people to know who it is that's perpetrating this violence on them. So, yes, this is a month and a half long campaign, stoptakingourhealthcare.org. But I'll be honest, Tom, it's like we've been doing this since the bill passed. And this is just the framework that we're doing it in right now. StopTakingOurHealthcare.org. People can join. They can do protests in their own communities. But we're not stopping in the middle of May, right? We're just going to do more all the way to November. And it's not just us doing this. I mean, I know you know this, but like this Friday, May Day, tapping into the deep history of International Workers' Day, there's going to be, you know, a economic boycott based on the successful economic boycott that happened in Minneapolis after the murders, the cold-blooded murders of Rene Good and Alex Preti by masked thugs, who, again, let's talk about what's happening now. So, yes, they cut $1 trillion out of Medicaid. These hospitals are closing, but it's not over. Right now they're talking about further hundreds of billions of dollars of cuts more from our health care to fund war and ICE. Right. Like it is just it is not crazy. It is evil. These are choices made by people whose moral compasses, if they've ever existed, the billionaires are somehow the magnet that these compasses now point to only. Yeah. But when the people sort of realize what's happening and they break through the propaganda that's being pumped into their brains by the corporate media, they do reject what this White House and this administration is selling.
I'm with you.
That's the hope.
Alex, you live in Washington, D.C., and you're well wired into the into party politics, Democratic Party politics, and more generally. Why is it, do you think, and what can be done to encourage Democrats to be doing what you're doing? I mean, why wasn't Hakeem Jeffries standing next to you or Chuck Schumer?
So I will do one thing that I always do. There's a big difference between Jeffries and Schumer, because Hakeem Jeffries is standing with us on this fight specifically. He can't be everywhere at once, but the Hakeem Jeffries is absolutely taking the fight to these Republican districts.
I'm glad.
I mean, like, he is taking the fight to them. So, you know, me and him are not going to agree on everything ever. But I will say he is taking the fight to the Republicans. While I think that Chuck Schumer is so absent that it's almost criminal. It's definitely complicit, right? Like, he is absent. So the need for a change in leadership in the Senate among the Democrats is so clear. And I think, you know, we are seeing that the jockeying and for that is happening right now. And you have people like Senator Van Hollen from Maryland, Senator Murphy from Connecticut, who are both, you know, standing up and I think voicing a much more aggressive and present agenda for the Democrats going forward. And I think it's just reflective of what you're seeing in the country. The American people are super clear. And it's not just Democrats, but definitely Democrats. You know, they want their elected representatives to fight Trump. They have to do something. You can't just be absent. And they have to make life affordable for the American people. I mean, gas is now, you know, $4 or $5 a gallon in places. And they're talking about now we're going to pay for the ballroom. Right. I mean, the billionaires just never can take enough. And the American people are footing the bill. So the American people are saying lower our costs, especially healthcare costs, because healthcare costs are just out of control as always. But costs across the board, groceries, gas, and any Democrat who wants a future in politics has to understand that that's the agenda that they have to focus on.
Yeah, I absolutely completely get it. How can people participate? You mentioned a website, stoptakingourhealthcare.something?
.org. Yep. .org. So I'm going to do two things just because it's they're attacking us on all fronts. We have to fight back on all fronts. Mm-hmm. So stoptakingourhealthcare.org to fight against hospital closures. But I'm actually here with John Bowser from Shawnee, my dear friend, and he's the president of our PAC at Social Security Works. We're going on this tour, and we're going to hospitals that are closing, but also Social Security offices that have been hollowed out, and they're ghost offices now. They're open right. in name only, and that campaign is at ghostoffices.org. And we need people. We need everybody to participate in any way that they can. This Friday on May Day, do what you can to participate. Just raise your voice. And when you do, you'll feel the power of solidarity, because one person can be ignored. But when there's millions of us raising our voices together, they cannot ignore us. And when we do it, we will win.
So the website's one last time here, Alex.
StopTakingOurHealthcare.org and GhostOffices.org.
I love it. Just a real quick question. We've got about 30 seconds. Who benefits from gutting the health care of the United States? You know, in many of these things, you can see that a particular industry, you know, as long as student debt is, you know, out there, the banking industry benefits. Who's benefiting from this? Just the billionaires who get the tax cuts? Is that it?
Billionaires who get the tax cuts and billionaires who profit off of it's not a broken healthcare system, Tom. You've been saying it for years. It's working just like it's supposed to. It's just not a healthcare system. It's a wealth extraction system. So the more it breaks things that serve the people, the more it serves the billionaires. That's why the billionaires always attack things that work.
I get
Social
it.
Security works. Medicare works.
Yeah.
That's how they're making their money. It's greed.
Amen. Well said. The great Alex Lawson. Alex, thanks so much for dropping by. It's always an honor and pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
I'll be right back. Stay with us.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
18 minutes past the hour. Back with more of the news of the day and your calls in just a second. Stay with us. Welcome back, Pat in Puerto Rico. Hey, Pat, what's up?
How you doing? Thank you for taking the call. In this whole Iran discussion, I haven't heard anyone ask, if Iran had nuclear weapons, why wouldn't they be deterred by our early launch detection systems, our 3,000 warheads plus deployed in the triad, the way that mutually assured destruction concept is supposedly deterring Russia and China, who have thousands of warheads as well and various delivery systems as well. But we think that Iran, if Iran would add the 1 or 10 or 12 weapons that people think they might have been able to develop, would not be deterred.
I think the rationale for that, because what you're describing actually is a position that Netanyahu holds and that many of the war hawks in the United States, certainly Lindsey Graham, is an advocate of. And the rationale that they provide, and I'm not agreeing with this, I'm just telling you, because on the assumption that that was a good faith question, is that Iran is run by an end times religious cult. And this end times religious cult believes that there must be a war, a world war, and massive destruction of humanity in order to bring back the Mufti, in order to bring back, I guess, Muhammad or whatever, you know, the Muslim version of Jesus returning, or maybe Jesus himself. I'm not certain. I'm not a scholar on this.
Isn't that what Huckabee and?
Yeah, absolutely. We've got Christians who are pitching that thing here. You're absolutely right, and it's one of the reasons why having those people around people like Trump is a scary thing. And J.D. Vance may be one of them too. You know, with his newfound religion, although he seems to be going kind of more mainstream Catholic, except he wants to tell the Pope how to do things. But that's the explanation. I don't buy it. I think that mutually assured destruction still works. I don't think that the Iranians are suicidal. I think history proves that. But they are,
they
will defend their country. I mean, we saw this in the Iran-Iraq war when over a million Iranians died in this, what, 7-8-year-long war. And, they just never gave up. I mean, they basically fought to a draw. So I get it. Pat, point made. And you did a great job of it. Thank you for the call. Chris in Chelmsford, Massachusetts. Hey, Chris, what's up?
I'm real fast. So what do you think about this man that tried to do a 425 on at the hotel with the television radio conference for the president this past weekend? Would that have been a 425 like there was a 9/11 in 2001?
I think you're asking, Chris, my thoughts on the shooter, the guy who wanted to try to assassinate the president. Yeah, he seems like a, I think anybody who takes a gun to a hotel like that to try to kill people is mentally ill. I'll just put that right up front. But, he seems like before his mental illness overwhelmed him, he was a decent guy and a very smart fellow. And, he was a teacher. He was an engineer. I just don't know, Chris. His manifesto is pretty grim. I mean, he said basically, I'm tired of having a pedophile and a rapist as our president, and I'm going to do something about it. That's what he said, but and I take that as sincere, but it's no excuse to do what he did, and it's no reason to do what he did. It's stupid to try to assassinate people politically or for any other reason, frankly. We'll be right back. Change starts with you. You can be calling your Democratic or Republican representatives to let them know what you think by calling 202-224-3121. It's the Capitol switchboard. It'll get you right through to them.
You didn't send tanks. They didn't break doors. They just bought the headlines and called it free press.
Welcome back. 23 minutes past the hour. So Democrats are leading in the polls, but voters are begging for new blood. This is kind of one of those, on the one hand and on the other hand, stories about Democrats and politics in the United States right now. And I think it's a really important one for us to pay a lot of careful attention to. Democrats are surging right now in the polling for the midterm elections, this November's elections. And Trump's approval has cratered down into the low 30s. Some polls are showing him at 32%. I mean, that's just absolutely mind-boggling. And so a lot of Democrats are very excited. Oh, yeah, they're going to just love the Democrats. But a new Yale Youth poll has Democrats up 23 points among voters 18 to 22. They're up 30 points among voters 23 to 29 and 39 points among voters 30 to 34. These are numbers Democrats haven't seen since Obama in 2008. But here's the catch. Young voters don't want the same old faces. Frankly, speaking as an older voter, I don't either. According to fundraising platform Oath, more than 80 young Americans have launched campaigns for Congress this cycle. Hey, that's pretty good, right? Four times more than last time. And they've already raised over $10 million. Oath CEO Brian Derrick says there's a real rift between younger voters and the older Democrats who seem to be more focused on hanging on for another term than fighting for working people. So the message to leadership is fairly clear. Make room. And I think, you look at this in the larger context. I'm not saying we need to get rid of the old Democrats. I mean, I want Bernie around. I realize he's an independent, but he caucuses with the Democrats. I want Elizabeth Warren around. She's in her 70s. There's some really high quality, very, very talented people. I'm still a fan of Nancy Pelosi, frankly. But that said, my concern is not so much, age, although I definitely want. I want the Maxwell Frosts to be coming up. I want the people who are under 40 and even under 30 to be running for Congress and winning elections. Because that's the next generation. It's the generation that's coming up. It's the generation that's going to inherit the world. that my generation and my kids' generation, Generation X and whatnot, have you know, created, the millennials and whatnot. So, you know, it's important that the Democratic Party be doing this kind of outreach. Just like I think it's important that, you know, that we're starting to see younger faces on progressive media as well. It's all good stuff. It doesn't mean that you throw out everybody. Like I said, you know, we still love Bernie, but who's 84 now? 83. He's older than Trump. 36. But the bottom line is that the Democratic Party is actively trying to reach out to young people. And I think that's a marvelous thing. And, you know, along those lines and kind of following up on Alex's conversation with Alex Lawson, time to replace Chuck Schumer. Chuck is a great fundraiser. Let's just make him fundraiser emeritus for the Democratic Party, right? And let me also encourage the young people who are watching, you know, and listening to the program, watching us on YouTube or Free Speech TV or whatever. If you're a young person and you're thinking about getting into politics, now's a great time. I mean, the opportunities are just huge right now. Or getting into the media, for that matter. You know, start doing your podcast, start doing your YouTube show or whatever. And, you know, fine-tune your skills. Learn how to make it all work. There's a whole world opportunity, and we need you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
So what say you? I'll pick up your calls on the other side of the break. It's 27 minutes past the hour. Executives warn of pain at the pump. Big oil rakes in $30 million an hour. Republicans flip the ballroom bill onto taxpayers, and America shuts down on May Day. Good morning. This is the Commonwealth Report, news for the public, not the powerful. You can sign up for free at commonwealthreport.news. Why are oil executives warning of a catastrophic price shock at the pump? A senior oil industry executive has a message for America. The pain at the pump hasn't started. Dan Pickering, chief investment officer at Pickering Energy Partners, told Politico that when summer driving season hits, gas prices will deliver a shock that hits people in the face. His exact words. It will be painful. With Trump's Iran war dragging on and the Strait of Hormuz still choked off, oil and gas executives are openly furious at Trump's market-manipulating happy talk. They warn another spike is coming around Memorial Day. National gas prices have already jumped from $2.94 a week the week before the war to nearly $4. Actually, it's over $4 now nationally. Some experts now predict $5 a gallon. Trump's war of choice is bleeding working families dry, and the oil bosses know it. Big oil pockets obscene profits while working people bleed. Who's making out like bandits while you pay over $4 a gallon? The world's 100 biggest oil and gas companies pocketed more than $30 million in windfall profits every hour during the first month of Trump's Iran war. That's The Guardian's analysis. The biggest winners are Saudi Arabia, Kuwait Petroleum, and ExxonMobil. If oil stays around $100 a barrel, big oil will rake in another $234 billion in war profits this year. Patrick Gailey of Global Wellness calls it Christmas for fossil fuel companies. They sit back and watch profits multiply while ordinary people pay the price. Greenpeace and climate groups gathered this week in Santa Marta, Colombia, demanding governments tax these obscene profits. Every American driver is funding big oil's biggest payday in history. Democrats lead the polls, but voters are begging for new blood. Democrats are surging in polling for the 2026 midterms. Trump's approval has cratered to the low 30s. A new Yale Youth poll has Democrats up 23 points among voters 18 to 22, 30 points among voters 23 to 29, and 39 points among voters 30 to 34. And these are numbers Democrats haven't seen since Obama in 2008. But here's the catch. Young voters don't want the same old faces. According to fundraising platform Oath, more than 80 young Americans have launched campaigns for Congress this cycle, four times more than last time. They've already raised over $10 million. Oath's CEO Brian Derrick says there's a real rift between younger voters and older Democrats who seem more focused on hanging on for another term than fighting for working people. The message to leadership is clear. Make room.
Is Netanyahu helping Putin loot Ukraine? This should outrage every American who supports Ukraine and democracy. Russia has industrialized the theft of Ukrainian grain. More than 2 million tons looted from occupied territory in 2025 alone. And Israel keeps letting it in. On Sunday, the Panama-flagged ship Pantorimus arrived at Haifa carrying over 6,200 tons of stolen wheat and 19,000 tons of stolen barley. It's the second time this month. Earlier in April, the Russian carrier Abinsk dumped nearly 44,000 tons of stolen Ukrainian wheat at the same port. Egypt refuses these shipments, but Israel takes them. Ukraine's foreign minister has summoned the Israeli ambassador. The EU is warning of sanctions. So why is Netanyahu running cover for Putin while Russia arms Iran and ships drone parts that kill Ukrainian civilians? Bait and switch? Whatever happened to the private donors paying for Trump's gilded ballroom? Remember when Donald Trump bulldozed the historic East Wing of the White House and swore up and down that private donors would fund every penny of his $400 million ballroom boondoggle? Here comes the bait and switch. After Saturday's shooting at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, Senate Republicans Graham, Britt, and Schmidt rolled out legislation Monday dumping the cost on taxpayers. Of the $400 million, $332 million would be taxpayer dollars paid through customs fees on imports. Graham said with a straight face that private donations could be used for buying China and stuff like that. So the gilded ballroom Trump promised would be 100% privately funded suddenly becomes a national security event. You pay $4 at the pump, and now you're paying for Trump's gilded ballroom as well. America shuts down on May Day. This Friday, May 1st, working Americans plan to shut this country down. The May Day Strong Coalition has organized over 3,000 protests across all 50 states, demanding workers come before billionaires. The action is simple. No school, no work, no shopping. The movement got its spark in Minnesota on January 23rd when 50,000 protesters marched in 20 below temperatures after an ICE agent shot and killed Renee Good, a 37-year-old mother of three and U.S. citizen in Minneapolis. Hundreds of Minnesota businesses closed their doors. Now it's national. Major unions are joining in, including the AFT, NEA, and National Nurses United. Rebecca Winter of Mass 50501 said it best, "We pay more for everything while those in power cash in. We the people are the economy, and we decide when it stops." And that's the way it is. Today, Tuesday, April 28th, 2026. I'm Tom Hartman. Help support Progressive Radio. If you're listening to us on a commercial station, call their advertisers and let them know you're listening. If you're listening to us on Pacifica or one of our many nonprofit stations, please support them when they do their fundraising drives. Thanks for supporting Progressive Talk Radio and tag you're it. They called it blood libel, what the Germans were doing against the Jews, claiming that they were using the blood of Christian children to make their matzah. We've got a new blood libel now here in the United States. J.D. Vance and Donald Trump lying through their teeth, arguing that black Haitian immigrants to the United States, legal immigrants with green cards in this little town in Ohio, are eating pets. And this is another libel that goes way back. In the 1890s, people were claiming German and Dutch immigrants were eating pets. Then they claimed in the 1880s, and actually as recently as last year, a restaurant got shut down in California because of claims that they were serving pets. They weren't. It was an Asian restaurant. This is just evil stuff, these lies and spreading this kind of hate. And this is now the strategy that the Republicans are using. There's a whole article about it at HartmanReport.com, hate as a political weapon. Check it out. And welcome on Your Mind today. Let's pick up some calls here. John in Cambria, California. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Hey, I have a question for you. I'm wondering, ever since George Bush, maybe it wasn't him that coined the word but the Bush Doctrine, where the main tenet of it was, preemptive strike. We feel you're going to hit us, then we're going to hit you first. Mm. Doesn't have to be any evidence. Once Congress and that both Republicans and Democrats basically just went along with that, and he had a little bit of support because, you know, after 9/11, the country kind of came together. But doesn't that make it easier for a person like Trump? And isn't that basically what he just did in Iran? He just said, I don't need Congress. I just use preemptive strike because I feel we're about to get hit.
Yeah, well, Trump didn't even bother to try to sell that to the American people. Bush and Cheney, you know, went through a 6-month-long lie to the people process that was rather extensive.
Did they get permission from Congress to go into Iraq? I thought it was just Afghanistan.
No, I'm pretty sure that, you know, we had a vigorous debate. I mean, it happened right here on this program. We started this show in March of 2003 in kind of in response to that. And my recollection is that, you know, when Colin Powell went to the United Nations and held up a little vial and said, you know, this is
yellow powder.
Yeah. Or anthrax or whatever it was. I forget. But, you know, and Bush said we don't want the surprise to be a mushroom cloud. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, they went through the trouble of trying to sell it to the American people. I would argue, let me take this a step beyond this, John. I would argue that if George Bush and Dick Cheney had been held accountable by Democrats during the Obama administration, if there had been any attempt at all to either prosecute the two of them for lying to the American people and lying us into these two wars, or to prosecute any of the people around them, or just to expose the fact that we were lied into these wars, congressional hearings run by Democrats. If any of that had happened, Trump wouldn't have done what he did. So the permission structure that was created here was not just because George W. Bush and Dick Cheney were able to convince, you know, even Democrats. I mean, Hillary Clinton voted for the war, right? It wasn't just that they were able, that their lies were successful in convincing people to go into war. The permission structure came from the fact that after the fact, when we all knew it was lies, they got away with it. There was no consequence to them. And so Trump is looking at that, you know, compounded by the fact that John Roberts and five right-wing crackpots on the Supreme Court, fresh out of the Federalist Society, all said, oh, yeah, he's immune from any kind of prosecution whatsoever. He can crime all he wants in the White House. And what's he doing? He's made $5 billion on, you know, the Emoluments Clause. Oh, to hell with the Emoluments Clause. We don't need no stinking laws. We don't need no stinking constitution.
Yeah.
John Roberts gave me, you know, immunity. And Bush got away with it, so I can get away with it. That's how he's thinking.
Yeah.
And he's going to go down in history just like Bush did as the idiot who started the war that blew up in our face.
Yep.
So basically,
the Bush administration had the decency to lie to us to get us to believe that something was happening.
That's true, John. That's true. You know, Trump didn't even bother lying to us, although he's trying now. He's trying to say, oh, well, we had to do this to prevent them from getting a nuclear bomb. Come on, just 3 months ago, you said, we utterly destroyed. They're obliterated their nuclear capacity. It's lying after the fact doesn't work. I mean, you know, Trump has gotten skated by his whole entire life, you know, BSing people and lying to people, and it's always worked for him in the past.
Sure
it's not
has.
Working anymore. The Teflon has worn off.
Nope.
At least, you know, with everybody except the MAGA base and the idiots who still watch Fox News and think it's actual news, which is a real tragedy. I have a neighbor who's like, oh, yeah, I watch Fox News. And I'm like, oh, my God. How do you even talk to such a person? Yeah. Anyhow, John, I've got to move along. Thank you for the call.
Thank you. Good talking
to you. Steve in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Oh, my God. I think we all have a neighbor like that. And, it's insanity. But let me say this. First, we had the big, beautiful bill for billionaires. Now we got the big, beautiful ballroom for billionaires. what was it, $400 million, the cost on this?
Yeah, it was originally $250.
Okay. Well, probably with cost overruns and stuff, it might be $800 million, maybe approaching a billion.
Yeah.
So it will truly be a big, beautiful ballroom for billionaires.
Yeah.
But the big thing is, let me ask you this. Is he doing this for a safety reason? He's saying he needs this now?
Yeah, the theory behind the argument that Trump and MAGA and all of the Russian bots are making right now over on Elon Musk's social media sewer is that because the hotel was not a secured facility, and therefore, you know, this this guy was able to make his way into the hotel with all this weaponry that he then tried to bring to the correspondence dinner, that events like the correspondence dinner should be held instead in a ballroom attached to the White House. And, you know, you can make that argument, but, you know, Trump went to the wrestling thing, or the fight, you know, smash people in the face fight thing last week, and at Madison Square Garden, and you know, I don't recall anybody freaking out and saying, you know, although he's going to have a fight like that on the White House lawn, apparently, on the 4th of July, right? So...
Right.
But I mean, exactly. You know, the smallest examination of his arguments proves that they're just horse crap.
Oh, totally, totally. And that's my point. He can't go to any other. There's events all throughout the country he's going to be attending, and there's going to be people there and stuff, and he won't be in that ballroom, so it kind of blows his argument out of the water. So.
Yeah. No, what Trump wants to do is he wants to build something bigger than the White House, so that for the rest of American history, people will look at that and go, oh, isn't that beautiful? Donald Trump did that. And he is not self-aware enough or insightful enough or thoughtful enough to realize that people will look at that and go, look at that monstrosity that idiot, you know, real estate developer, failed real estate developer, thought would, you know, it was a monument to his own ego. And now, did you see the latest? Not only is he minting a gold coin with his face on it, but now he wants to put his picture on our passports.
Oh, jeez.
This just broke. That,
you know,
like just 20 minutes ago. It's on Drudge. Trump.
Oh, my God. Nothing is too much for
this. And they're going to do it. They're going to do it. And it's going to have his signature on there in gold, right, on our passport. I'm like, you know, Jeremy is like, oh, my God, I better renew my passport quick so that I don't end up with one of those. It's like, oh, my
right.
God. It's like every day there's a new indignity, you know. Every day there's a new Trump
indignity. Every darn day. Every next day is a new one. You got her. Well, thanks, Tom. I appreciate it. Take care.
Yeah, good talking to you, Steve. Thanks. Slomo in Milltown, Montana. Hey, Slomo, what's on your mind today?
Hey, thanks, Tom, for taking my call. I love your program. Been a big fan since the Al Franken and Air America days.
Thank
so
you.
Just loving it.
Thank you. Yeah,
anyway,
I helped start Air America.
Yeah, it was great. I miss it, you know, but I'm glad I have satellite radio and XM, and you're one of my favorite things to listen to on a daily basis.
You Thank
know,
you.
Sometimes I get a little angry listening. Yeah, not at you, but what's happening.
No,
yeah, at any rate. I mean, you've always had this... this sort of idea of it all started with Reagan. And that's sort of where a lot of the debt has come from, the U.S. national debt. And I'm wondering if there has been anybody that is sort of tracking how much that correlates with the growth of billionaires in America, where sort of the wealth was just shifted upwards. And then more importantly, with this big, ugly debt bill, whatever they passed last year, all these cuts from your guest earlier was talking about all the hospitals that are closing and all the Medicaid cuts. It's still not going to be enough for the war and for ICE and all this budget. So there's more money being piled on the debt, and they're still cutting.
Yep.
So I think debt needs to be something that the Democrats own as well, that put onto the Republicans, that we start talking about a little bit so that they can't do this when the Democrats take office in your two Santa Claus theory. So
I agree.
I think it's an imperative, too.
Yeah, and the Republicans seeded the ground for this. I mean, S-E-E-D, not C-E-D-E. They fertilized the ground on this by yelling about the deficits all these years as part of that two Santa Claus theory. You know, every time when Clinton came into office and when Obama came into office, it was, oh my God, it's the debt. Oh my God, it's the debt. And they did it when Biden came into office too. Oh my God, it's the debt. We got to cut spending. But if you add up all of the tax cut, the impact of the Nixon, George W. Bush, and Trump tax cuts, it's those three Republican presidencies, the tax cuts equal more than $39 trillion, which is, you know, what our debt is approaching right now. And so, you know, this is entirely owned by the Republicans. And I don't know why the Democrats aren't saying that out loud every single day. They should be. And they should have been saying it for years and years and years. and calling this out. We had almost paid off our entire national debt in 1981. When Reagan came into office, the national debt was $800 billion, eight-tenths of $1 trillion, not even $1 trillion. And to answer your question, Shlomo, at the time that Reagan came into office, there were either six or seven billionaires in the United States. Now, you know, there has been inflation. You know, in today's dollars, it might have been maybe 20 or 30. I don't know. It might have been more. But the fact of the matter is that there's, I think, in the neighborhood of 1,000 or 1,200 billionaires now. We have more billionaires than any country on earth. We're minting billionaires. And our billionaires are richer than billionaires were back then. I mean, you got Elon Musk is about to be a trillionaire. You know, we have billionaires. If one guy, Mark Zuckerberg, owns 2% of all the wealth owned by millennials in the United States. He's the richest millennial in America. He owns 1/50th of all millennial wealth in this country. So, you know, it's and this is largely all the consequence of two major things that happened during the Reagan administration. Number one, the beginning of trickle-down economics, the tax cuts. And number two, in 1983, Reagan ordering the FEC, the SEC, and the DOJ to stop enforcing the antitrust laws and allow these giant monopolies to form. And, you know, and the monopolies are crushing us, and the tax breaks are killing average people and making billionaires. These billionaires, they don't, Trump hasn't paid any taxes in decades. I mean, these guys, they just don't pay income taxes. So, you know, it's insane. Shlomo, I got to run. But that was a great question. Thank you so much. And thanks for listening to us on Sirius XM there in Montana. I appreciate it. It's 47 and a half minutes past the hour. I'll be back with more of your calls in just a moment. Stay with us. It's the Tom Hartman Program. Talk media for the rest of us.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
The place where despair is not an option. I'll be right back with your calls. Welcome back. Don in Brinkley, Arkansas. Hey, Don, what's on your mind today?
How you doing, Tom? Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I wanted to ask you if you can do some type of program or some type of paper where you can explain to the younger generation basically what affordability means and why it means so much to their future before AI becomes blended in and then that we lose everything. The Democrats are failing. I don't care how high up in the polls they are right now. They're going to blow it because they don't have and they never have a plan for anything. Get the American people, including MEGA, they need jobs. We need to ensure that the American people have security and jobs in the future. Because AI is going to take over in about a year, and it's going to be done for.
Yeah.
Everything that Trump and them are doing right now is a distraction.
Yeah. I mean, Facebook is laying off 8,000 people right now, I think it is. You've got bankers laying off people. Lawyers are laying off people. There was a piece in the Financial Times, I think, a couple days ago about how people in college right now are changing their majors midterm, you know, because they signed up for things that are now being replaced by AI. Yeah. Do you have any suggestions, Don, about exactly what this should be?
What the affordability answer should be?
Yeah.
Yeah. Invest in that we need to get a movement of the American worker. And from everybody that works, they need to get that movement. The Democrats need to focus on pushing the American worker and looking at policies and laws that will make the American worker whole again. Because they don't have the power.
Yeah, but my question is, it's not just AI, it's automation more generally. I mean, they've got factories in China that build cars, and they literally have no lights because there are no humans.
And now tractors, now farm equipment with AI. They're testing it in Japan.
Yeah. So the question that everybody has, and I don't have an answer for this, Don, and that's why I'm asking if you do, is what would that be? I mean, you know, we're going to continue to have service industries, I suppose, although even doctors now are starting to be replaced. You know, radiologists are worried about their future because AI is better at reading x-rays than and MRIs than radiologists. But what, you know, outside the universal basic income seems like an easy solution. But what else? What do we do?
I mean, the only thing I can say is we have to get a movement. The Democrats, are, if they win, they need to have a majority.
I'm with you on the movement, but what's the movement advocating? Yeah. What specifically are we saying? You can't just say, oh, we're for the workers. You know, you've got to say, and here's how it's going to work.
Well, because if the workers win, then they dictate how policies are.
But they're not going to be able to say, oh, you know, this law firm is no longer going to use AI or this car factory is no longer going to use robots. I mean, it's just not going to happen.
No, but if we get ahead of those policies and say we have to intermingle the American worker with the AI, whether it's in a supervisory capacity or just the fact of teaching them how to work with AI.
No, I get your argument, Don. And this is no criticism of you. I don't have the specifics either. It's weak on specifics. That's a big struggle. We got to figure this stuff out. Don, that's brilliant. Thank you. Hey, thanks so much for sharing our program and for reaching out to our stations and sponsors and letting them know that you're listening. It really means a lot to us. When Ronald Reagan took over America in 1981, we handed him a brand gleaming new country. Franklin Roosevelt, Harry Truman, Dwight Eisenhower, Jack Kennedy, they had built America. We had brand new schools, brand new hospitals, brand new interstate highway systems, brand new airports, infrastructure. We were the envy of the world. And then Republicans came along and they said, well, you just cut the top tax rate from 74% down to 27% and everything will trickle down. Instead, what do we get? Billionaires and poverty. They said, hey, just deregulate guns and an armed society is a polite society. Instead, we've got more school shootings than anywhere in the world. They said, just kill off civics and history classes in our schools and liberate our young people to focus on science and math. And now we've got people who don't know how our government works. I mean, it just goes on from there. There's a whole rant about it over at HartmanReport.com titled FDR Saved America, Then the GOP Ripped Us Apart. Check it out. 53 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Picking up your calls here. Sean in Utica, New York. Hey, Sean, what's up?
Oh, good. How you doing, Tom? A little bit about me. I own a political consulting firm, and I heard you talking earlier about some about younger people getting involved. And I actually have some really good news to share.
Okay.
I have three younger candidates running for the state level offices in the state of New York.
Oh, marvelous!
I have one. The youngest I have, his name is Dennis Gordon. He's running for the 117th Assembly District. That's up in the North Country in the Adirondacks. He's 26 years old, and he's extremely charismatic, brilliant, and he's got a lot going for him. And he's running for an open seat there, so we're going to be going for that fairly aggressively. Another one I have, her name is Mandy Drake. She's running for the 53rd Senate District, trying to unseat a 20-year incumbent who, while he's a nice guy, was on the radio not too long ago having an epiphany that affordability and health care might be a problem for some people, where Mandy has lived these things firsthand, and that's quite a bit of her messaging. And the third one, his name is Ihor Semko, and he has a pretty interesting story because he's a Ukrainian immigrant, came here as a child when his parents immigrated, put himself through school, got two bachelor's degrees plus an MBA, and now he's settled down and has a family here. And he's going to be raising a family and looking to unseat an Republican incumbent, in the 122nd Assembly District.
That's marvelous. Sean, when any of your candidates make it past a primary, please feel free to reach out to us. I'm always happy to have people like this on the air. It's just I don't do it prior to primaries. You know, I've been burned a few times doing that.
Oh, I understand. Yeah. Yeah. Fortunately, none of them have a primary opponent at this point. But yeah, we'll definitely be reaching out after our primaries are in June. So sometime after that.
Yeah. Yeah. Please do so, because I love to platform young people. And in fact, I'll put you on hold here, and you can Mateo can take he can give you information on how to reach out to us. Okay.
Great. Appreciate it. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Sean. Hang on. Dan in Kansas City, Missouri. Hey, Dan, what's on your mind? We just have a minute, by the way, Dan.
Yes, sir. I just have one thing, or it's about the ballroom.
Mm-hmm.
If these people, the Republicans, if I'm a Democrat, but if you can't go without a ballroom and you need this money, first of all, Trump didn't go through the proper procedure to... Right. Tear that down. When I'm working 35 years in the government, federal government, and if we ruined a car or broke a car or something, we had to pay for it.
Yeah.
You know? So, hey, look, you tore that down, you broke it, you pay for it. You're supposed to be the billionaire with all your buddies.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm just saying that this is just crazy. I thank you.
Dan, I'm out of time.
I appreciate
you. Yeah, thank you, Dan. Thanks for the call, and thanks for listening to us on SiriusXM. I appreciate it. And thanks for being with us today. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. In the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires all of us, and that includes you. So get out there, get active, tag, you're in. Have a great afternoon. Be good to yourself and the folks around you. Stay safe. Eat your veggies. Take your vitamins. Get your exercise. We got to stay ready and healthy, because we got a lot of work coming up ahead here. I'll catch up with you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.
Years ago, when I announced that I was leaving my job as editor of the Texas Observer to run for political office, I had to admit that going into politics is the only downward career move one can take from journalism. But being both a journalist and a politician does hone one's ability to detect the smell of BS. And we Americans are presently getting a noxious blast of that stench from our warmongering Department of Defense. The vast trillion-dollar Pentagon is the ultimate Big Brother bureaucracy, literally empowered to compel thousands of Americans to die in foolish military misadventures cooked up by political partisans and profiteering corporate contractors. That's why it's so alarming that Trump's Project 2025 autocrats are now rushing to slam an iron door of censorship on reporters trying to inform us commoners about the militaristic schemes and corporate fraud that comes from inside this government fortress. In the name of defending freedom, Trump's palace guards are banning media outlets that displease His Royal Highness. Also, Pretty Boy Pete, Trump's made-for-TV Pentagon honcho, has even decreed that reporters must be tightly monitored by military escorts while doing interviews, reviewing documents, and otherwise exercising the essential constitutional rights of our nation's free press. The good news is that rather than kowtowing to the autocrats, dozens of media organizations have told Pete to stuff it, choosing to do old-school outsider digging into this insider war machine. This is Jim Hightower saying, meanwhile, the Project 2025 authoritarians hail their